You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour on this Thursday. Bill Walton will stop by in about 20 minutes from now. More phone calls on the way. Steelers hold off the Ravens. Bud Dupree lost for the season with a torn ACL. LeBron extends his deal 2 more years. Anthony Davis has signed up for 5 more years with the Lakers. Michigan and Maryland has been canceled. The Rockets ship Russell Westbrook to the Wizards for John Wall. You know, the funny thing about NBA contracts is we celebrate them when the players sign them and then forget about them when they turn into albatrosses. And that's when you go, wait, he signed for how much? Wait, he's owed how much? Well, Washington reportedly dealt John Wall in his 3-year, $132 million deal to Houston for Russell Westbrook in his 3-year, $133 million contract. Westbrook has at least won an MVP. He was third-team All-NBA last year, and he'll be reunited with his former coach, Scotty Brooks, in D.C. John Wall gets to go to Houston, where he gets to watch James Harden shoot. And keep in mind, both teams were trading distressed assets, and that's what made this difficult, because Westbrook wanted out. You know, it was like a one-year experiment. Nah, I've seen enough. I want out. I want to be my guy, play my game. John Wall hasn't played. December of 2018 is the last time he played. Even if John Wall's healthy, I still think the Wizards got the better end of this deal. I don't know what John Wall's going to be like coming back from a torn Achilles, but this is one of those trades where you go, we'll take your guy that you don't want and you take our guy that we don't want. And then we're going to find out, Bradley Beal want to play with Russell Westbrook, or does he want to be traded? Does James Harden still want to be traded? Or does he say, oh, John Wall? Yeah, I'd love to play with John Wall. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. Kyle in California is back on the program. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, DP. You know, you're totally right with John Wall and Russ. Who knows what the heck's going to happen? Those two are just going to be a blur up down the court, throwing it to whoever, whenever. But LeBron, he needs to be defended. He gets trashed at every turn for no reason. When you find out Russell Westbrook and John Wall make just as much money as him, you say, okay, maybe LeBron's the biggest bargain in the league. So the LeBron stuff's always LeBron stuff. And then, by the way, LiAngelo on the Pistons, all three Ball brothers. Let's go,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, I saw that. I mentioned that to the Danettes this morning. Thanks for the phone call. LiAngelo can shoot. You know, the other two Ball brothers can't shoot, but he can shoot. He's just not as good an all-around player. And maybe he's got a chance to stick with the Pistons there. Tim in Florida joins us. Good morning, Tim. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a competitive basketball, or I was anyway. You know, it's polarizing about it. I mean, the guy's a flopper. Man.
Got a bad phone connection. I think Tim in Florida started out by saying LeBron is a flopper. So your big criticism of LeBron is he's a flopper. Boy, get in line. Take a number of the guys who flop, flail. Yes, Paulie.
LeBron's flops, though, are especially dramatic because of his physical size, because he cannot be moved by most.
But
NBA
does that players. Make him polarizing?
No, that doesn't bother. It really actually doesn't bother me at all. It's on the refs to call it or not call it. LeBron's just working the refs. The refs are the ones who are at fault. But when he does it, he does the
I know.
Sergeant Elias getting shot in platoon move. And he's about four times the size of Sergeant.
Oh, I think it's embarrassing when I see that, but that doesn't make him polarizing. I mean, there are other things if you don't like him. This comes down to, and I don't want to make the final hour about LeBron and Michael Jordan, but this is what this is about. It's Michael has this place where you put him on the mantle, or it's that portrait that you put above the fireplace. And now all of a sudden somebody says, you know, I was thinking maybe putting that some other place. Maybe, I don't know, in the den. Can we put another portrait up there above the mantle? Yeah, what are you thinking of? LeBron James. Oh, no. Can't have that up there. We don't want LeBron interrupting our memory. Like Mike, he never missed a shot. He never lost a playoff game.
True.
No, he did lose playoff games. Yes, he did. Sorry. Yes, he did. Yes. First couple of years of his career. Now, if Michael had been on Sports Illustrated at the age of 16, and it was the chosen one, He goes to North Carolina. He does hit the game-winning shot for a national championship. That's big. But he would have got into the NBA, and the critics would have been all over him because he couldn't get out of the first round. Michael didn't win. And then all of a sudden he realized, I'm going to take less money, or I'm not going to ask for more money. We're going to build a roster here. He got Phil Jackson. Scottie Pippen turned out to be one of the great draft picks in NBA history. You started to fill in other parts of that roster, and he had a great team. But Mike never had the hype. He got the hype after the Air Jordan. Like, once he got the shoe deal, then we wanted to see if he was great and an all-time great, because he was still just a fascinating highlight. And then he started to win. And then that's what's different. You know, LeBron started out and he was getting into the playoffs. They went to an NBA Finals with one of the worst teams ever. One of the worst teams to ever go to the NBA Finals, and they played the Spurs. But he didn't get credit. He lost. And then he'd go again, and then he would lose. And then he said, well, okay, if I want to be compared to Jordan, nobody's going to come here to Cleveland to play, and I'm going to go to Miami. Well, he got criticized for that. And then he went back to Cleveland, won a title. Yeah, but Kyrie hit the big shot. Okay. Let's see him do it in the West. And then he goes to the West. Oh, yeah, look what happened to LeBron. He went out there. They didn't make the playoffs. Okay. And then they win a title in the bubble. Degree of difficulty. Through the roof. And here we are. LeBron, team to beat. Great offseason. And then, oh, he should have taken less money. Why? They have the team to beat. Anthony Davis didn't take less. And here comes LeBron James knocking on Michael Jordan's door. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to open up my scrapbook and see LeBron in there. That's what bothers people. And there are things. He's passive-aggressive. He hasn't always been a good teammate. I don't believe he's punched a teammate, as Michael did. But it feels like however we can make this more about Mike and less about LeBron, then there are people who are going to do that. Trust
and
me.
We Jordanists can spin this. LeBron didn't care enough about winning to punch out a teammate. Come on, where's the commitment to the craft?
Yeah. He should have punched out, who was it, Boobie Gibson? Remember that day? Varejao? Big Z? God. He took a CBA roster to the NBA Finals against the Spurs. All right, Dan Orlovsky was on first hour, and I got high praise for him. He's a very interesting guy. And he talked about how this is foregone conclusion. If I gave you the Chiefs of the field to win the Super Bowl, and Orlovsky said not even close, taking Kansas City, and this is why.
If they go down 14, I still 100% unequivocally believe in them. Like, I just, their quarterback does so much stuff with his physical talent and then his brain. Like, it's, he sees things so fast. Because if they go down 14, they're still going to have 50 plus snaps. That's why, like, the holding the football is such a big deal.
And I understand that. We've seen it, but they flirt with danger and they don't put you away. But, and they got lucky in the postseason, they got lucky in every single game. Now, you could say luck is the residue of design, but they got lucky. And then Orlovsky said the best non-quarterback in the league is?
I look at that offense and I go, there's no flaw. Kelsey's the best player in football that's not a quarterback.
You think Kelsey is, he's the best player who's not a quarterback?
Yeah.
Wow. Over Aaron Donald?
Man, he does... What?
Over Aaron Donald?
I mean, for me, yes, because okay. Just because he brings so much offense to their offense before the ball ever gets snapped.
And I found that interesting. Now, I don't know. Does anybody McLevin, I'll start with you. Is Travis Kelce the best non-quarterback? Now, I don't know best or most valuable, but the most talented player, non-quarterback in the league?
No. He's the second most talented player on his own offense behind Tyreek Hill. So I can't.
Well, that would be the third most talented then behind Patrick Mahomes.
Right, not non-quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I agree. Kelsey's unstoppable. And whenever you think you have the Chiefs beat, he runs into the middle of the field and catches that ball in front of him, turns for 30 yards. But no, that's a too strong statement. I'm not sure what the – is Aaron Donald the answer? I'm not sure about that, but no, Kelsey's not number one.
If you said I could start my team with Aaron Donald or Travis Kelsey, I'm taking Aaron Donald.
What about Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelsey?
Now, I think Tyreek Hill is great. He relies on others to help him be great. I think Travis Kelsey would be great on any team. I think Tyreek Hill needs situations where he can take advantage of them, and he has. And he's got, you know, Mahomes to help him. Kelsey is going to help out any quarterback. I think on like every down, he's going to be able to help you. But, you know, George Kittle is, to me, as good or if not more well-rounded than Travis Kelsey. And Kittle's a great blocker. Now, you might say, well, what's that mean? Well, in the Niners offense, it means everything. Kittle has that speed to beat you deep. So I don't think it's Travis Kelsey's the best non-quarterback in the league. Now, he can be in the conversation, but no, I don't see that. Yeah, Paulie.
I'm going to spice this up a little, Dan. I'm going to offer you Aaron Donald and George Kittle. You can sign in both of them, or Travis Kelsey and Myles Garrett. Package deals.
I will take Aaron Donald and George Kittle. Aaron Donald is there every play. Myles Garrett shows up. And he can be, you know, an impact player. He's not like Jadeveon Clowney. He's a better player. But George Kittle to me is on equal footing with Travis Kelsey. And that's pretty high. I mean, that's high praise that they're, you know, toe to toe. But Aaron Donald is just different. There's nobody in football like him. No one. To lead the league in sacks as a defensive tackle. I mean, that doesn't happen. And he's double teamed every game. Now, Aaron Donald to me is the non-quarterbacks, the best player in football, most valuable player in football. In my astute opinion, of course. Jesse in Los Angeles. Hey, Jess, what do you have for me?
Hey, DP.
Hey, bud.
Hey, I think I have a solution for you with the Todd situation, and I have a comment on the great Bill Walton.
Okay.
My solution, I'm sorry to bring it up, but because it makes him uncomfortable, but every time you go to break, just drop the cone of silence on him and sneak past him. But my comment on the great Bill Walton, who is a national treasure and a UCLA legend, I thought I'd give you my commentary from my favorite commentary piece from him, and that is Pacers versus Lakers, 2000 NBA Finals. Shaq is dominating. He's averaging like 38 per game and obliterating Rick Smith in the process, who also happens to be Dutch. And Bill yells out, "This guy can't guard Shaq. It's like he's trying to defend him while wearing wooden shoes out there."
Thank you, Jesse. Oh, I put the cone of silence down on Todd. You know what I mean?
So funny.
I know.
It's such a great angle from this vantage point, too, because all you could see is the material.
Oh, I know, but he freaks out. Can't breathe.
I feel the walls closing.
I know. I don't
like that.
I just wanted to see if it worked.
It's like you're stuck in the elevator.
I just wanted to see if it worked. By the way, there was a football game yesterday, and I enjoyed it. It was far more entertaining than I thought it was going to be, far more competitive. I think that's probably because the Steelers dropped a lot of balls there. And I root for RG3 because of what he once was, and he's never going to get there again. He got hurt yesterday again. He wants to be a pocket passer, but you got to put in the time to become a pocket passer because he's not a guy who's going to be able to beat you consistently with his legs. He's just not. And, you know, Trace McSorley is probably a better quarterback than RG3. And he's the third string quarterback there. But I wanted to, I was hoping that he would have a couple of plays, you know, because he did. That rookie year, that was different. He was Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson. He was Kyler Murray before Kyler Murray. Here is Mike Tomlin, the Steelers head coach, after the victory.
To be bluntly honest, man, I'm really disappointed in our performance tonight. We did enough to win, but that's all. It was really junior varsity, to be quite honest with you, and it was in all three phases. We couldn't run the ball effectively when we needed to. We dropped too many significant passes, very catchable, makeable passes. We didn't make significant plays in the special teams game. Our kickoff coverage unit wasn't good enough. We turned the damn ball over. It's good to proceed with the victory. I acknowledge that. But not a lot happened tonight to be proud of or to be excited about other than that.
The Steelers are the 13th team in the Super Bowl era to start out 11-0. Of the previous 12, 9 reached the Super Bowl. 5 won it. No AFC team has opened up 11-0 since the 09 Colts. We talked about this before. More likely to have a winless team or an undefeated team. I think the Jets. Now, what happens if New England in the last game of the season? Doesn't New England play the Jets in the last game of the season? Let's just say you're Bill Belichick. You're going to be still coaching the Patriots for I don't know how many years. And you decide now is when Brian Hoyer is going to start a game. We're going to, or Jared Stidham, whoever it might be, because you'd like for the Jets to win so you don't face Trevor Lawrence for the next couple of years. Put Julian Edelman in there, quarterback, right, Paulie?
I'm down with that.
Okay.
Let's get Edelman in there.
I deal with conspiracy theories occasionally, and I'm just wondering that. Like, Bill Belichick thinks of everything. He's diabolical. Would he actually tank a game without officially tanking a game to make sure that the Jets don't get Trevor Lawrence? I don't know. Like, if you're Belichick, now he might go, it doesn't matter who's quarterbacking for them. You're going to face Trevor Lawrence for the next X number of years, as long as you're going to be a head coach. Would he actually trot out his second string, third string team? Yeah, Paul.
I actually have a hot take I've been sitting on all week. I think that somehow Sam Darnold's going to be the next Patriots quarterback.
Well, I brought that up a couple of weeks ago, and then I had it shot down quickly by an NFL scout who goes, how do you think the Jets are going to let him go to New England? I go, I don't know. I just thought maybe that I could see Sam Darnold in Pittsburgh or San Francisco. But I can't imagine the Jets would trade him within the division to the Patriots. Yes,
if it's the best offer, though.
Well, if I'm the Jets, I don't want to trade him in the division. Yes, Todd.
Bill Belichick has too much pride not to try to win every time, especially a division rival, especially if there's any possibility that anyone would think that you're trotting out the less than your best team where it could even be perceived that he's looking to maybe blow this game. I have a tough time believing
that. I don't know. Yeah, McLovin.
I called it a few weeks ago. If they win this week, they're 6-6. The Patriots are coming to the playoffs. He's going to force a week 18 somehow and get in as the 18. But if they beat the Rams and the Chargers, I think they're going to be like the 7th seed.
Yeah.
Every game is a field goal one way or the other, so you never know.
Coastal Carolina was going to play Liberty this weekend. That game has been canceled. Coastal Carolina is now hosting BYU. BYU only has one other game scheduled. That's San Diego State, December 12th. BYU hasn't played since November 21st. They're ranked 13th in the latest college football playoff rankings. And looking for a quality win, this still is not going to move them up on the doorstep of playing for a national championship. But I commend them for trying. We'll take a break. More phone calls coming up. And the Hall of Famer, Bill Walton, will join us coming up next 20 after the hour here on the Dan Patrick Show. Imagine the happiest you've ever been and now double it. That's what Todd was like yesterday when he had a Built Bar. The bars are great. And the kicker is guilt-free. Like 130 calories guilt-free. 20 grams of protein. 4 net carbs guilt-free. I know what you're thinking. So it's pretty good for a protein bar. No. Not just good for a protein bar, you're going to crave it more than your favorite candy bar. And what's great, yesterday I went to work out, obviously I work out, and grabbed a Built Bar. So that kind of tied me over, and then I went and worked out, killed it, and then you're ready for lunch after that, or maybe you just wait till dinner. Built Bar has 18 flavors. You're going to love the coconut almond, the mint brownie. Yes, Todd.
There's raspberry, there's orange, there's like crisp apple, like an apple pie kind of thing. They got it all figured out.
Yep, you're going to love it. Because if Todd likes it, it's like Mikey with Cheerios. He likes it. He likes it.
Yeah, that commercial is very old. If I would have said that, why don't we keep it in the century?
BuiltBar.com, promo code DP. Get 20% off your order. That's promo code DP at BuiltBar.com. You're welcome. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at FoxSportsRadio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Get some more phone calls coming up. I've had a lot of conversations with Bill Walton. And one of my favorites, we did, we looked back on an NBA game at NBA Entertainment in New Jersey. This is many, many years ago. And I was driving into New York City and Bill said, can I hitch a ride? And I was driving a Jetta at the time. And Bill sat in the front seat, and Bill, who's actually not 6'11", he always wanted to be listed as 6'11", he's probably 7'2", and his knees were up over the dashboard, and Bill says, what kind of tunes do you have? And I had 8-track cassette tapes, or 8-track tapes, and I had Bob Dylan's greatest hits, and then Bill sang all the way through the Lincoln Tunnel, or whatever it was, Jersey Tunnel, as we were heading into New York City. One of my favorite memories. The Hall of Famer, Bill Walton, joining us on the program. Good morning, Bill.
The streets of Rome are filled with the bubbles. They're everywhere. You know, we'll state that we're seeing double on this beautiful fall day on planet Earth. I'm alive, I'm married to Lori, and I'm talking with Dan Patrick, and that's the coolest desk I've ever seen. I'm a big bobblehead guy. I'm a big collector of stuff like that, but I have never seen anything quite that nice. Maybe if I blink a few times, I can even absorb more of it right through this screen.
Yeah. Well, you gave me some merchandise. I have one of your jerseys. I have an autographed basketball. I also have a picture that you autographed. I believe this is your first NBA game. Your first NBA game was against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Dayton, Ohio, when Kareem was with the Bucks.
Correct. And Don Nelson had just stepped down as a player, and he was Don Nelson, an incredible entrepreneur, a business visionary guy, and he was the promoter of the game. And I had just graduated from UCLA. Kareem went to UCLA, and Don Nelson thought it would be a good idea. It was a great idea for Kareem. It wasn't. I had had knee surgery about 2 weeks before, and it did not go well. But it went very well from Kareem's point of view, who was without question the greatest player I ever played against, and the standard of excellence that still exists today.
And I followed Bill out. He was walking out in the parking lot. You had a red and black flannel shirt. You had your hair back in a ponytail. You had
the first guy to ever wear a ponytail in
the history. Yeah. And you had a bag of nuts. You had a brown paper bag full of nuts.
I try to bring my nuts with me all the time.
All right, set this straight now. I know you never want to be listed as a 7-footer. I think the quote was because 7-footers are considered freaks. Bill, you're not 6'11".
I would love to be 7 feet tall. I love just being taller and taller and getting ever small higher up on the mountain there. But the last time I was measured, I was 19 years old, and I was at UCLA, and John Wooden was always in charge of the measuring, right? And he would stand on the ladder with the ruler that you put on top of your head as you stood next to the wall, right? And Ducky Drake, the trainer, legendary. Ducky Drake was incredibly instrumental in Rafer Johnson's remarkable life and career. And light a candle and say a prayer for Rafer, who just passed on yesterday. But it was, John Wooden would call up everybody in alphabetical order. So we had Henry Bibby, and we had Greg Lee, and we had Larry Holyfield, and Larry Farmer, and Sven Mader, and all the guys. And then he, and as they walk up, and Coach Wooden puts the ruler on top of their head, and he calls out, okay, Greg Lee, 6'5". Henry Bibby, 6'2". Larry Holyfield, 6'5". Larry Farmer, 6'6". And then Sven Nader, 7 feet tall. And he says, Walton, your turn, alphabetical. I get up off my stool, and I walk toward him, and I get halfway across the room, and he says, you're 6'11". Go sit. That was the last time I was like,
You got to be 7'2".
No, I'm not. I feel like I'm about 8 or 9 feet tall, especially after the Camping World of Maui Gym in Asheville that we just had this week. That was just over the top. But whenever I stand next to Kareem, then I know I'm barely 6'11". And then whenever I stand next to Yao Ming,
well, Yao Ming, him or Mark Eaton are the two biggest players.
But that's not even close between Yao Ming and Mark Eaton. You know, Mark Eaton is 7'4", and Yao Ming is 7'13".
Yao's so big, too.
It's not how big you are, it's how big you play. And, you know, Yao Ming, a giant on and off the court, and what he has done for the world to make it better. Kareem, the incredible job that he's doing right now. Wilt, who was just this spiritual force of nature that changed the direction of everything. But it's not just the big guys. I mean, I just did a show with Dr. J the other day, and the remarkable impact that he has had on all of our lives. And, you know, when Dr. J graduated from high school, he was 6'3", and he grew a couple more inches, but it was his remarkable, incredible, spectacular, phenomenal, empty the thesaurus, what he was able to do in terms of inspire, ignite, and to be able to take things to another level. And he was really critical, Dr. J, in terms of changing the course of history, because for so long, I mean, you look at the 34 MVPs in the history of the NBA. And at the beginning, there was Bob Cousy. 5 or 6 years in, there was Oscar Robertson. Other than that, it was 6'9 and above. It was Bob Pettit. It was Bill Russell. It was Wilt. It was Willis Reed. It was Wes Unseld. It was Dave Cowens. It was Kareem and Moses and all these different guys. And now all of a sudden, in 1981, Dr. J, it all comes together for him. And then from that point on, it's really been coming down in terms of size. Although the current MVP, Giannis, is absolutely incredible what he does. Today's players are so spectacular. And one of the things that I love about today's players is their versatility, the broad spectrum of all their skills, and the fact that they love to use their platform, the most incredible platform, NBA, ESPN, Turner, to promote a better world for other people. And so with Giannis flying around out there, and then you have LeBron, who was over the top and literally indescribable. Because when I watch LeBron play, I cannot figure out what the best part of his game is. I don't know if it's shooting threes, if it's driving, if it's dunking, if it's blocking shots, if it's his defense, if it's his passing, it's his screening, it's his leadership. I mean, he has it all. And to see how remarkably close he is to passing Kareem. I remember when Kareem passed Wilt, and Wilt, his comment was, if I had ever thought that anybody would come remotely close to breaking my records, I just would have doubled them up. And then Kareem, he goes on, and Kareem gets, I think, maybe 8,000 more points than Wilt did. And then it looked like Karl Malone was going to pass Kareem. And then all Karl got hurt and could no longer play. And Kareem, and I, you know, I asked him what it was like at the end. And he said, you know, I feel everything was fine. I was going like, yeah, Kareem was the first 20-year player in the history of the NBA. And, you know, he made college basketball what it is. He carried the NBA for all those years. There was never a game that he played, never, that he wasn't the absolute focal point of the other team's defensive and winning strategy. And so, but Kareem said that he was going along and everything was just fine. And then one day he got there, he didn't get hurt, but he got there and he just couldn't do it anymore.
Got
and
old. So, yeah. Did you miss, you missed Wilt Chamberlain by a year or so, didn't you?
Yes, Wilt retired. Bill Russell retired right as Kareem came in. Wilt retired right as I came in, and it was Wilt was, I met those guys. I started playing basketball against NBA players when I was 14 years old. And the San Diego Rockets expanded here and had Jim Barnett and Pat Riley and John Block and Don Coges in the first year, quickly followed by players like Elvin Hayes, Rudy Tomjanovich, Calvin Murphy, all Hall of Famers. Pat Riley, the Hall of Famer as well. And then the business and coaching and basketball executives on that team, when little Billy was 14 years old, it was Pete Newell, Alex Hannum, Tex Winter, and Jack McMahon, all of them in the Hall of Fame. And so wow. I was, and that was my life. And then overarching everything, Dan, was John Wooden. And so I had the perfect childhood, and I had every opportunity. And one of the disappointing things for me is that California, we just had Proposition 16, which was going to reinstill affirmative action in California. And it failed. It failed badly. And the when you know the history of our country, and check out Jill Lepore's book, The Beast Truth, check out Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, and check out Isabel Wilkerson's Cast. I mean, the disadvantages that people have to overcome, and to see what so many guys have been able to do. When I was just virtually in Asheville over the weekend, over the early part of this week, and Johnny Davis, my great teammate from the Portland Trail Blazers, the guy that really put it over the top for the Blazers with his remarkable skill and passion and talent and everything. Johnny grew up in a very tough situation, right in the projects of downtown Detroit in the late 60s, when there was battles in the street and tanks and war and fire and explosions. And Johnny was to tell the stories about how his mom would not let him leave the corner of the room because she was afraid for his safety. And then when Johnny got to Dayton, where that first game was played, it all rolls into one. Johnny was playing at Dayton for 3 years. We played against him. We didn't even know him because John Wooden, he thought the other team was irrelevant. He never mentioned the other team in 4 years, other than two times we lost both of those games. Thanks a lot, coach. But Johnny, when Johnny came to the NBA, he was telling us his story, quietest guy ever. Johnny made Jamal Wilkes look like Daniel Webster. Right? And so, there it was that Johnny was telling us that, he left school early because he was tired of seeing his mom spend her whole day, her whole life on her hands and knees scrubbing people's floors. And so he went on to the NBA, spent 38 years. Johnny's 65 years old. I can't believe it. Married to Leslie, two wonderful children, Austin and Reggie, and Reginald, sorry. And they live in Asheville. He's retired there. But 38 years to be able to build your life and career and to see what the NBA has become, Dan, it's a dream come true for me.
I do want to, before I run out of time, that you were very lucky that you played for UCLA and you played with Jack Ramsey. So you start your college career with a structure. You played for Jack Ramsey. I think it's one of the finest teams, true teams I've ever seen in NBA history, the Blazers, because that you guys weren't selfish. You understood it. You got out, you ran. You were a star, but you weren't a star or acted like a star. At UCLA, coach wanted to make sure that everybody was, you were all great players. And then you watch what basketball is now in college. Like, I don't know how frustrating this must be for a true purist and has every right to be a purist. When you watch what basketball in college, great athletes, but very little structure.
I love college basketball, and I love the coaches, and I love the efforts that they're making and try to help these young men build a life, create a dream, and then develop a network and so that they can go on and use this incredible platform of basketball for the rest of their life. And I'm so lucky to be able to be a part of that still. But the game has changed. And the style has changed. But when you come across a good team, when you come across a great game, and as we had this, I'm on cloud 17 from this last week in Asheville. I couldn't believe it. We had Bruce Hornsby on the air. He told some spectacular stories.
And he had a son who played at LSU, right?
After starting at UNC Asheville. And Bruce was telling the story. So Bruce has two children. And they're twins, and Keith is a little bit older. Keith started at UNC Asheville, and then he realized that I can play at a higher level, so he transferred to LSU and played very well there. Now he's playing professionally over in Germany. And the younger twin, Russell, I've lost my voice here, Bruce. I've been I, uh, Dan, I've been talking nonstop. And so anyway, Russell, he lives in Los Angeles, but he's also, you know, his real passion, he lives in Los Angeles for business and work. He's in the entertainment industry. But his real passion is climbing mountains. And I love people that climb mountains. And I like movies like Free Solo with Alex Honnold.
Oh, man.
The ability to look at the impossible and figure it out, which is kind of like me looking at your desk and saying, how do you navigate right there? How am I going to get?
If I gave you one concert aside from not a Grateful Dead concert, right, one concert to revisit, what would it be?
There's so many, Dan. I've been to 4,000 concerts. I mean, I started going when I was 15.
I know, but there's only one, Bill.
I don't like to rank them. Well, this, how about if we make it Woodstock and I get to pick the Woodstock 17 and I get to pick the roster? You know, there's so many. There's Bob Dylan, there's Neil Young, there's Jimmy Cliff, there's John Fogerty, there's Jackson Browne, there's Bruce Hornsby.
Okay, wait, I'm going to give you five bands for Bill Walton's Woodstock. Okay, you don't have to go into any description. Just five bands.
And how many children do you have?
I have four.
Okay. We have six, and we have 14 grandchildren. And so how am I ever going to?
Bill, stop being so difficult. Treat me like I'm John Wooden here. I want five bands at Woodstock.
This is how Coach Wooden would phrase that question. Bill, Woodstock. Interesting place. Who are some of the bands among the many that you like?
Okay. And?
I just gave you a whole bunch. I didn't even get to Fleetwood Mac or the Eagles. Endless. John Lennon, George Harrison. And that's the beautiful thing about the shuffle, right? On my electronic music here, I got the shuffle. And it's amazing how the shuffle knows. So we're having this spectacular run through the Camping World Maui Invitational in Asheville. And it's over the top fantastic in every way. And then at the very end of the game, the guy who has been the best player through the entire tournament comes against all odds and against every bit of adversity known to man. And he makes the game winner at the buzzer, and they win. And he acts like, yeah, this is what it was supposed to be. It was like a scripted movie. It was so perfect. And then as we leave the air and I turn back on the shuffle comes up with Jerry Garcia the bright side of the street from the dark end of the street to the bright side of the road. And I've been, you know, in times of trouble, I always listen to the music play, and three songs that have really been sticking of late: Bright Side of the Road, and that was the one that came up immediately on the shuffle, and then Waiting for a Miracle, and then See What Love Can Do.
It's always great to talk to you.
Todd Fritz.
Thank you, Billy.
Have a wonderful day. I'm alive. I'm married to Lori.
He's not 6'11". He's probably at least 7'2", but one of the great college players of all time, Hall of Famer Bill Walton. We'll take a break. Last call for phone calls. Close up shop right after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Last call for phone calls. You know, you listen to Bill Walton, and I mentioned this yesterday when I knew we were going to have Bill on. You know, he was suicidal. His back, he'd had so many surgeries. And he just got into a real deep state of depression. And I remember talking to him when I just didn't know if he was really there when I was talking to him. And I could tell that, you know, he got to that point where he just said, I don't want to have this pain every single day. And he had so many foot surgeries, so many back surgeries. And I just think he got to the point where he just said, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And so when I hear his voice, and even if he rambles and he just goes in different directions and gives you an obscure, I don't care. And I just love hearing him. I like hearing the life in his voice. Because he was one of those people who was so special to me because of the way he played basketball. Now, granted, I didn't play that way. Like, he was so selfless. He was a team player. And I just watched that Portland team, and it's the most enjoyable basketball team I ever watched. Because they just had synchronicity. Lionel Hollins, Johnny Davis, Bobby Gross, Larry Steele. You had Mo Lucas. You had Walton. And they faced the 76ers in the NBA Finals, and they lost the first two games. And I thought, oh, my gosh. I hope they don't get embarrassed. And they came back, and they won four straight to win the title. And, you know, Bill had won every place. You know, he won at UCLA, and he won there. And then they started out the following year, I think, 50-10, and he would have been the MVP, and he got hurt. And really, that was just the start of it. And then he got revitalized thanks to Larry Bird. Bird got him in Boston. He was sixth man of the year and, you know, won another title or two up there. But, you know, he's got a great spirit about him. And he does love the game of basketball. All right. Let me see. Final results of the poll question, McLovin.
Okay. I put up for hour three. Who's the biggest bargain? And the choices were LeBron, Nick Saban, or Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes number one by a long shot, then Saban, then LeBron.
All right. I got a tweet here from Ryan Robertson. Hey, great 20-minute interview with Bill Walton today. Dan only had to ask three questions. Yeah, that's usually more than I get to ask with Bill. Jeff in Detroit. Hey, Jeff, let me sneak you in here.
Hey, what up, though, Dan? When you were talking about LeBron James, it kind of reminded me of the beginning of the Five Heartbeats when the house announcer was on the mic. He said, coming to the stage, these guys told me they're better than the Four Tops, Rolling Stones, and Temptations all rolled in one, but we shall see. That's kind of how the media did LeBron. Put him on SI cover, told you he's going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. And in all honesty, and this is coming from a Detroit hater, he hasn't let you down.
No.
Quick question.
Yeah.
He hasn't let you down. Quick question. You're getting back from vacation. You don't know nothing about the football landscape as of right now. If I told you the NFC Giants are first in the NFC East or the Ravens are barely holding on to third place in the AFC North, which one is the most befuddling statement?
Probably the Ravens, you know, because there are people who thought that they would lose maybe one or two games this year. They're going to hold on for dear life to make the playoffs. Might be the third best team in their division. What did I learn today, Todd?
Dan Orlovsky says Travis Kelce, the most talented non-QB player in the entire NFL.
What I learned, brought to you by Built Bar, simply the best tasting protein bar around. 18 amazing flavors, mint brownie, coconut almond, pumpkin chocolate chip cookies. Believe me when I tell you, tastebuiltbar.com. Enter the promo code DP for 20% off and then thank me later. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show.